Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen. And today's guest is Bill Berggren from the Berggren Law Offices. Bill, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Hello.
Today, Bill, we'd like to talk about your practice a little bit, and it involves intellectual property. And in my practice as a mergers and acquisitions advisor, when we sit down and talk to our clients, we talk about balance sheet items, and we talk about furniture, fixture, vehicles, equipment, all of those type of things. But intellectual property is non-balance sheet assets. They're the processes, the things that business owners develop as they build their business. Can you give us just a little background on what all is encompassed in intellectual property?
In half an hour?
Okay. You can do this, Bill.
Okay. Intellectual property is an area that people oftentimes think of too late because there are a lot of time frames involved in acquiring intellectual property. And it's something that is very important, actually, because you spend a lot of time learning how to market your company, market your product, your services, mm-hmm. obtaining goodwill for this, but you're not protecting what makes you unique, what draws customers to come to you for your product or service. Intellectual property does that. It gives you property rights in different degrees depending on what form you use. There are four forms of intellectual property. One is patents. A second one is trademarks. A third one is copyrights. And a fourth one is trade secrets. Each have their advantages and their disadvantages.
Mm-hmm. So as opposed to hard assets, these are intangible assets. These are the processes, the things that you've developed when you're building your business. And you've indicated already that timing is critical here. These are things that as you're doing them, you might not even realize you're doing them, but there are ways to protect these processes using in which we'll discuss when we're talking about patents, trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets, correct?
Right.
So where do we start? Do you want to give us a little background on patents? What all is involved in patents and what do they cover?
Well, patents basically cover the function of something in technology. The topics are machine, a product of manufacture, a process of making or using, or a composition. This can also include, doesn't cover, for example, things like, it doesn't cover, for example, things like your customer list.
Okay.
But it does cover the things involving of a technical nature, machines, methods of making or using, compositions, or articles of manufacture. They have the broadest coverage, and basically you're creating property rights that are defensible in court. That's what you're doing. You're trying to keep your competition out of your area.
You're staking your claim?
You're staking your claim to the phrase you call the company, the trademark, the copyright, the literature you use, the art, the logos.
So when it comes to a patent, then you're talking about an exclusive right.
The patent is exclusive right to prevent others from making, using, or selling that object. Doesn't guarantee sales.
So you can actually patent a logo?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I was using
trademarks on that
different
one.
Yeah. Different terms in intellectual property. As far as patents are concerned, you can patent only things in a certain areas of defined by statute.
Okay.
Machines, the articles of manufacture, compositions, and methods of making or using. Trademarks protect the source of the good from others.
Okay.
So let's stick with patents for a minute, Bill. Now, a patent, if I've devised a machine that can produce something that's unique and I want to go get it patented, what does that mean? Do I go to the government? First of all, I assume I come to you and you can tell me how to do this, but what's the process? How do you get a patent?
The process is you have to obtain a patent, issued patent, to have property rights. You first file an application for that patent, defining what you believe your property rights are, and you have to, in the patent, disclose how to make and use this. Because in exchange for disclosure to the public, the government will give you a limited monopoly on those rights. Currently, it's 20 years from the when you file it, but they only begin when it issues. If it takes 3 or 4 years to prosecute the patent before it issues, you then have 17 or 16 years of actual life.
And that's that limited monopoly you referred to?
And during that time, yes, during that time, you can prevent others from making, using, or selling the invention.
So you make an application to, is it the United States Patent Office?
Make an application to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and then currently, because of the huge backlog of patent applications, you might hear from them in 1 to 2 years. And they'll come back, and they're by law required to give all possible reasons why you shouldn't get a patent. And you're then asked to respond to those reasons, and then you're in a back and forth process to basically find out what kind of claims you are entitled to. And then after the back and forth discussion, a patent is issued.
If it isn't in violation of some other patent that's already been issued.
If it's not already known. Okay. Now, some of the things that prevent you from getting a patent are if you weren't the inventor, which you wouldn't file an application in the first place. There are other things too, which we'll go into in another discussion on patents specifically.
We'll cover that a little more in depth in another podcast. Roughly how many patents have been issued by the United States Patent Office?
Over 7 million so far.
7 million patents. I'm envisioning some person with dark eye shades and sitting in a room, and they've got this big pile of paper, and now they have to go look through 7 million patents to see if this is unique enough to issue a new one.
Yeah, I hope it's automated databases they're looking through.
I'm thinking about those underwriters again, but something like that.
Scared of underwriters.
I think 11 depositories around the country. Minneapolis is one of them. And you can go through them by number and look at them. They're also filed in the in Washington, D.C., the home of the patent office, in a number of different categories based on technology. So you'll have a patent copied 5, 6, 8, 10 times and placed in different cubicles, which you can then hand go through in that cubicle and search. And there have been hand searches by different categories of technology for patents, because oftentimes the words that are used aren't a good way of searching. Like, for example, a process can be defined different ways, and it's sometimes useful to see the illustrations or pictures, which you can't search electronically.
Oh, okay.
So electronic searches can help, but a hand search sometimes is more necessary.
So somebody physically goes through?
There are people that will go out and do that hand search for you for a fee. There are also people that I use, they're former examiners, retired, that know the system, and they search like an examiner would. And they come back with, if I give them a brief description of the invention in claim language type thing, they'll come back and give me 6 to 12 references that are closest to that. And when the examiner searches the application later, they typically don't find many different ones from that. So the search is fairly reliable.
So the patent process is a fairly sophisticated, time-consuming process to make sure that whatever it is you're trying to patent is unique and unique enough to get a patent issued, and also to allow you later, if somebody tries to copy your product and do something with it, to have some kind of enforcement against them to prevent them from competing with you. Is that right?
Well, it has to be, because you're creating property that could be worth millions of dollars. Look at the medical device applications or products out there. Mm-hmm. They're all based on patents, and some of those patents are very narrow in a universe of other patents. And there's litigation on those patents because the profitability is sometimes as high as 90%.
Wow.
Well, this is fascinating, and, yeah. and we're going to get into patents in a subsequent podcast a little deeper. But right now, I think we should move on to the second type of intellectual property referred to as trademarks. Can you explain to us what that means?
Trademarks is the best way to defend your goodwill, your market presence. You put a lot of money into brand name, brand loyalty, saying you're going to buy Tide, not any detergent, but Tide. So it makes sense to have Tide your name. Someone else can't sell Tide and say, buy my Tide.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on protecting the consumer from being defrauded. It doesn't protect you, it protects the consumer, because the consumer is the one that buys the product and they're assuming that they're buying it from a certain source.
So one could be a higher quality if there was competition, another could be a knockoff that really wasn't any good.
That's true. General Mills puts a lot of money into their trademarks for Honey Nut Cheerios.
Mm-hmm.
To have me go out and make Honey Nut Cheerios and try and sell that shouldn't be allowed because the consumer would be defrauded.
Mm-hmm. So briefly, what would they have to do to trademark the name Honey Nut Cheerios?
They first have to make sure that the name really is unique for Cheerios, because this trademarks are based on category of goods, and they're about 34 categories of goods, and then another 8 or so categories of services. So what you're doing is you're seeing if the name is unique to the goods that you are trying to market to the public.
Mm-hmm.
Who makes that determination, Bill? How do you do that?
You can go into the patent office database and see what they've already assigned as trademarks and see if any of those are close to yours. And that's the general basic search.
So the trademarks are issued by the patent office?
No. Trademarks are basically created when you sell a product in the marketplace. That's common law trademark.
So you just do
and
it.
And you have a trademark only in the area in which you've been selling it, by county. If someone else sells Breezy pencils in Colorado and you've been selling them in Minnesota, they can do that. If you've been selling them in Colorado also first and then they try and do it, they can't, because you were the first in the marketplace in that county with that brand name. If you want to have a trademark throughout the United States, even where you have not gone, you can then get that by registering it with the library, with the Patent and Trademark Office. Once they do a search to see if indeed no one else in the country is using that, and it's unique and not obvious, it's not descriptive or generic, then they will give you assign you an allowable trademark. It's then published to see if someone opposes it. They've been using it somewhere in some town, for example. And if no one comes up and says, we haven't been using it, then you get a number. At that point, you have a right to use that name for those goods anywhere in the country, even if you haven't reached that market yet.
So let me just clarify. If a business owner has a product that he's named and he's selling, say it's a local business owner in the Twin Cities,
like me,
and they want to trademark that name, does that mean they just start using it?
Or if they want to trademark that name, they put a capital T, capital M as a superscript after their name in all of their marketing literature.
And it's as simple as that.
And it's a trademark. That's a common law trademark.
Okay.
The problem is, if somebody else was using that somewhere else, or if someone else, even worse, had a registered trademark through the Patent and Trademark Office, and they heard about you using this, they can send you a letter saying, throw away all of your signage, all of your advertising, this mark is owned by us.
And if they can prove they used it first and it's registered, then you aren't registered,
you're out.
Then you've made a mistake and you've wasted some money, haven't you?
There's a quilting store in Minneapolis that did this very thing. They had a name that was unique. They put it on the store, had literature printed up, were quite happy, got a letter in the mail saying, this is our registered trademark. You can't use that. Now, they weren't using that in Minnesota. The other party wasn't. But they had a registered trademark, which means nationwide use. The company had to change their signs and throw away all the literature. It cost them $15,000.
So it's actually a good idea just to go out to the USPO and check it out if you're going to spend money on a name, even if you don't plan on registering it.
That's the minimal. Because that way, if it's not on there, someone can't come to you and say, you can't use it.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be marketing your area to say that.
So the message for business owners is, if you're going to start using a trademark and you're going to invest some serious money in it and sell it and use it, probably the best thing to do is check and make sure there is no national trademark before you do that.
Actually, it goes a little bit further than that. If you want to use a name, and just in Minnesota or just in Twin Cities, you're going to try and have customers identify with that name, at least do a search of the U.S. Patent Trademark Database. It's not expensive, and it tells you if someone else can say you can't use this name. If you want to put a lot of money into this and make a business around the whole country eventually, then you want to pay for an additional search that goes into, is this name used in telephone books, on Google, by other states, anywhere in the country? And obviously it's not anywhere, because those kind of searches will cost lots and lots, but it's a reasonably complex search that sees whether it is being used in a lot of other places. Those searches typically cost about $1,000 for a name. And there are services that do this search. But that's the one you want to do if you want to put a lot of money into it and you plan to use this outside of the area.
Okay, and we're going to get into trademarks in depth in a separate podcast as well. So let's move on to the third one that you were talking about, and that's copyrights. How do copyrights work? What kind of an exclusive right does that give an author of a document, for instance?
Copyrights, just like patents, are under the Constitution. Trademarks are in the Taft-Hartley Legislative Act. But patents and copyrights are a constitutional right, therefore a federal right, therefore the government controls it. In the case of copyrights, according to common law, you can have a copyright just by creating it. You don't have to file anything to get to have a copyright. Once you publish it, you now have the copyright on that, and you can put on that document 2009 copyright in your name,
mm-hmm.
or your name copyright 2009.
So just like the book that I wrote on exit strategy that I shared with you, we've got that copyrighted and published, and therefore if someone else tries to use it, then they've violated my copyright rights.
Right. The problem with copyrights, unlike patents, if you have a device that, like a duck, if it looks like a duck, smells like a duck, walks like a duck, it's a duck. Copyrights, it comes down to how close is someone else's creation to yours, and were they aware of your creation when they did theirs? They can have an identical article or picture, but if they were not aware of yours, they independently created that, and they have their own copyright.
How would they, if it's word for word, how would they be able to say they weren't aware of it and be?
It depends
it
on how many words
defend.
You're copywriting. If you're copywriting a one-page instructional manual
mm-hmm.
versus a 180-page novel, and it depends on how close it is. You're right. If it's an identical novel, it would lean toward the idea that they had seen your novel first and copied it. But that's a court to decide, and it's based on how close it is and what their nexus to your idea was. If they had seen your idea
mm-hmm.
first. You must prove both of those and that you're damaged.
So is the in the instance of a book, is the date it was first published, that would, it seemed to be, that would be an important date if it comes to a conflict with someone else that was using your materials.
It's an important date, but it's only part of it. You have to show that what they did was similar to yours, and they were aware of yours. Because, like I said, if someone else creates a picture or a manual that looks very similar to yours, but they were not aware of yours, they independently created that, and they have their own copyright. You can only sue them for stopping if they were aware of yours.
Yeah,
and that's why copyrights are not as valuable as patents.
So the remedy here is if you write a book or if you write some marketing materials and you use it, you find maybe a competitor using excerpts from it or something without your permission, and your remedy is to go to court to stop them? Is that what you do?
If you've done certain things, and this is where some people make mistakes. If you have a copyright on a book, you wrote a children's book, and you're getting money for it, or you're selling it, mm-hmm. and you see someone else with a book like that, but a different cover, or similar content, and your first thought is, they're infringing my copyright, my book. I'm going to sue them. You go to state court because you never filed anything. You got a copyright because you were the first to create it, and they don't even show up. You win a default judgment, and you think, wow, this is fantastic. You then go to collect, and they say, you had no jurisdiction because you were in state court. This is a federal matter. Constitution, remember. Constitution says this allows you to have copyrights. So you say, okay, suck up, throw the money away, and go to federal court and say, judge, this person did me bad. I want money. And the judge said, okay, they're not even here. Default judgment. The other party says, when you try and collect, you had no right to be in federal court because according to statute, you can only be in federal court if you are registered before the Library of Congress.
You can't win for losing on this one.
So then you go to the Library of Congress, you register the mark, and then you can go to court, and then you can win. The point is, the registration before Library of Congress is very inexpensive. The filing fee is probably $40. If you are a photographer and had wedding pictures, you could file them every 6 months and have 1,000 pictures under one submission for $40.
Well, Sam, asked the simple yes or no question, but Bill's proven that we've got an attorney in the room because we didn't get yes or no. We got a nice discussion of what your remedies might be. Bill, we need to move on to the fourth area, and that's trade secrets.
At least you didn't get the standard answer, it depends.
It depends.
Mm-hmm.
I think
he learned that,
though. Trade secrets, Bill. Tell us about trade secrets and why that's important to business owners.
Trade secrets are basically anything that is secret that has a commercial value. If you have a customer list, if you have a process for making something that you haven't told anybody else about, and they can't determine how a product is made by just buying the product, it's a trade secret. Trade secrets have the advantage of being valuable for as long as you have them.
For as long as they're secret?
As long as they're secret. The disadvantage is they're only as long as you have them. For example, professional symbols, professional quality symbols, are made by a trade union. They haven't published anything about this, and the secret's been passed down from generation to generation. So it's a trade secret, and it's been well maintained.
Okay.
Bill, I know that we talked earlier that you have an example that you wanted to show us about a seat case and try to show us how that would work under patents, trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets. Can you run through that for us?
You'll have to define a seat case.
Okay. A seat case is a suitcase that you can sit on. You hold it upright and it doesn't collapse under your weight.
Okay.
It's a simple idea. But if you a patent would protect the functional aspect of that, a suitcase that's strong enough to support weight.
So the manufacturer of the suitcase.
The article of the suitcase would be protected from other people making, using, selling, or importing that device.
And that'd be the details of how it was constructed.
Right.
Okay.
The trademark would be identifying the source. You now sell this as a seat case trademarked.
So
and identifies you as ABC company that makes it.
Okay.
Someone else can't, XYZ company can't sell a seat case because you own that name. The name in the consumer's mind identifies that seat case with you.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of the whatever is you. The third aspect is copyright. Copyright would be the physical article, the sculpture, three-dimensional sculpture of the seat case, the appearance of that, can be copyrighted. But if someone else, not knowing about your suitcase, has the same thing, they can have this. But if they've seen your seat case in some ad or somewhere, they can't. That's what you have to prove. The trade secret is irrelevant in this case because once you sell it, a person can redesign it, re-engineer it, if you will, and the secret's out. So those are the four aspects of intellectual property and how they can or can't protect things.
Okay, Bill, and we're running out of time for this podcast, but any words of wisdom for a business owner as they build their business, as the business starts to prosper, as they manufacture products, as they invent processes, what would you tell a business owner to think about during that time?
I would encourage the business owner to contact a patent attorney as soon as they envision a business or selling new products or ideas, to see what kinds of intellectual property are available to them and how to obtain coverage. Because a lot of this is date dependent. For example, if you disclose a patent, an idea, an invention, once you disclose it, make it public, you have 12 months to file an application. After that time, you are barred from an application.
Ouch.
So early on in the process of building your business, sit down with a patent attorney and talk about what you're doing, how you're doing it, and what kind of rights that you have the opportunity to protect, be they either patents, trademarks, copyrights, or trade secrets.
Yes.
Well, Bill, this has been a fascinating discussion of intellectual property, and we're about out of time for this session. I'm Tom Lyons with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen. And we'd like to thank Bill Berggren from the Berggren Law Offices for being with us on this segment of todaysbusinessradio.com.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.